Closed captions are available for this video and full transcripts can be found on our blog.
My name is Debbie Reynolds. I'm a data privacy advisor and strategist from Chicago. Welcome to the Node Zero community at the Data Collaboration Alliance. This is the Data Drop panel, where every month we gather some of the leading data privacy and data professionals to hear about the news stories that stood out to them most in the past month or so. So we have stories here featured today that are also included in our sister Data Drop News podcast, which delivers a 4-minute data privacy news roundup each week. So this month, we have very special guests. We have Heidi Sass, who is the founder and CEO of HT Sass LLC. She's a data privacy and data protection professional from the DC area. We also have Samir Ahario from Ardent Privacy. He's a CEO and founder of that organization as well, also from the DC area. And then we have Jeff Jokic, who is the founder and CEO of Privacy Plan. He's also a data researcher and a dear friend of mine. So let's jump right on in. So Heidi, you have a story, WhatsApp rewrites its Europe privacy policy after record $225 million GDPR fine or pounds.
Yeah. That one was a little bit more than just having to hit the swear jar. So they decided to go and do a little bit more about it. What they did was say, we are not changing how we collect the information or how we share it or how we use it. And you don't have to agree to anything new. They've just offered a little bit more transparency about what they're doing. So they've added more words to it. And if you start digging into the words, I was looking at it, oh, you can delete your account, you can do this and that. Well, if you want to learn more about data deletion, you can click right here. And when you click right there, here's what you get. So we still got a few problems with transparency, and it's Greek to me, but I think that this was right. This is the UK version of the WhatsApp privacy policy. I think what's also interesting is that this week I also got other privacy policies from updated of other companies, such as the terms of service for YouTube, right? And Google. Google now says that their privacy policy, besides the terms, their privacy policy, although it's not part of the terms, we encourage you to read it. So Google has decided that the privacy policy is no longer a part of their terms of agreement. So, I mean, there's a lot of shifting in the regulatory notices and things that are going out to people at the end of the year. It's not just people getting upset and wanting more transparency. The question, I think, is what are people going to do now that they have the transparency and you know more about what they're doing? Well, what are you going to do about it? They're not going to stop, you know? So did you really accomplish your goal by getting them to take this step? So I think, you know, they're getting bigger with the enforcement fines is adding a little bit more legitimacy, but are we getting closer to our goal? I'm not sure.
That's a great point. I think people already misunderstand what their rights are. Yeah, and it isn't as transparent as it should be. Then also, you know, I think someone somewhere needs to address the fact that these things aren't written in plain English and they're entirely too long. So it's like, do you sell my data or don't you?
Right? Yeah. I do a lot of other stuff too, but I'm gonna kill you with some words. So you're gonna not even know about it or care by the end.
Yeah. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I'm glad to see somebody getting a fine, finally, right? I mean, we don't see very many big fines coming out of privacy. There are a few, but they're sort of far between. And I think transparency really is the thing that we really want to look for, right? We get a lot of, other things happening in privacy and a lot of focus on regulations, but transparency really needs to be the big goal, I think. And this is really a sort of step toward that. And we need real transparency, as you just said, right? Letting people really understand what's going on rather than throwing a lot of complicated words at them. And I think this is maybe you know, a small step toward that, right? I don't think really WhatsApp is actually getting to true transparency here, but maybe that's the intent, right?
Right. What do you think, Samir?
So the interesting thing about WhatsApp compared to the other social media platforms is you don't need to actually sign up, right? It actually acts like your default messaging app almost, right? For so many, like billions of people. So people even probably don't even realize, right? They're signing up for something because your phone number is eventually your user ID. And that's the kind of killer feature for WhatsApp, where like Facebook, you don't have to go and type in and fulfill the forms, right? You just add your phone number, download app, and it's so simple to start messaging. So I think, of course, these record fines and things are at least making them accountable. And I think it's global now. They got pretty good action or at least some attention in India as well about the misinformation and stuff. So I think it's a good news. More transparency is required. And even more for WhatsApp, because people don't even realize, a lot of people, due to the lack of awareness, they're signing up for their data because there is no registration form or anything, right? You click like two buttons and you're, boom, you're on WhatsApp.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great point. It's a lot of, I guess, the opposite of friction. So it's like no friction whatsoever to have you sort of slip into these things. So, yeah. Jeff, you have a story. Australian online privacy bill to make social media age verification mandatory for tech giants, Reddit, Zoom, gaming platforms. This is interesting.
Yeah, Australia is looking to really update their Privacy Act. They were one of the first countries to really come in with a strong Privacy Act, but that was almost a couple decades ago now. And so their Privacy Act needs some updating, and they've put a bill out essentially for comment, and they've promulgated 67 different sort of proposals to seek public commentary. And they essentially have sort of organized those into three different classes of organizations that they're looking to regulate more heavily: social media platforms, data brokers, and large online platforms. And that the large online platforms sort of roughly correlates to what Europe is doing with very large online platforms as part of some of their legislation. So that's sort of interesting. And, you know, I think that what's really sort of important here is that I think this could actually be stronger than what GDPR is doing right now. The enforcement mechanism could potentially go up to 10% of global turnover. Which is pretty amazing, right? So they're not really playing around. Now, it could be that this doesn't actually stay there, right? I mean, that's the proposed amount. And some of the other things that they're proposing are pretty heavy-handed as well. So we'll see if it actually stays there. But Australia has been taking a pretty leading role in privacy for a long time. They're a little bit maybe not so forward thinking at the moment because they haven't updated their legislation in a while. But I expect them to move forward and sort of get ahead of where everybody else is now. So I'm expecting some big changes.
That's a great point. What do you think, Heidi?
I think... you're right. Yeah, people don't really pay enough attention to what's going on in other democratized countries to see, you know, how it may have impact because they're trying other things. And, you know, meanwhile, we're getting nothing done, but we could be learning by what they're trying. And they definitely know what they're talking about. I mean, if you like the privacy commissioner for New Zealand is now the head, the privacy commissioner for the UK. So, you know, I mean, it's just, and I think one of his tweets that got him in trouble was they don't give a zuck. So, I mean, that's the word of a privacy commissioner now. So, I mean, the people that we really want to be in positions to make change are, and it's not necessarily in our country, but globally, I think that we're getting where we need to go because data is global. And so our strategy should be as well. So I think I'm encouraged by some of the things that I see coming out of there. Do I see something like that coming our way? No, because of the power of dark money in our country. But I'll get to more of that in a minute. So I'm encouraged to see new legislation come out that is thinking and applying mistakes that we've already learned to say, let's do our legislation this way because it wasn't working for them. So that's intellectual. That's, you know, encouraging.
I think that Australia, first of all, things about children tend to get passed. So this is definitely going to go right. And then also as if, depending on the difficulty it has for organizations to be able to implement it, I think the other organizations that don't have to do this will probably try to start doing this as well. So they'll see this as a harbinger of things to come. What do you think, Samir?
I think the social media and gaming, right, that directly impacts your society. So I think privacy is just fundamental human right. More and more people are realizing it. So I think more than even lawmakers, the whole incidents happening around the world, right? Those are prompting naturally these laws to come forward in legislature. And I think we're gonna see more events and more countries doing the same. And it's just a social impact. I mean, the power of all these social media we saw here in the United States during elections and especially involved also the gaming part. I don't think they're like heavily monitored. There are some good things done there by the companies and the nonprofit societies who actually try to self-govern them. But I think they actually put the very good important three industries there, right? Social media, gaming, and one more, which are actually directly impacting. So it's a good news. And I think that's going to happen globally, no matter. And this, all the forces, the incident forces going to actually push that envelope to forward. I think that's
what's
going to happen eventually.
So, Samir, I'm going to start out with you now. Digitization of courts bring privacy concerns, but India lacks a right to be forgotten. I'm fascinated about what's happening in India. So tell us about the story.
Yeah, so there was a big WhatsApp story on India as well, right? How do we stop misinformation? But overall, right to be forgotten, I think it's a very big, and if you see the three-dimensional minimization logo, right? So we are pretty passionate about that. So I can talk for hours, but I'll be brief. So I think good news is it is coming up. So PDPB, the new Privacy Data Protection Bill, it does have right to be forgotten. It's not passed yet, but it's very close to passing. Because it was supposed to be shown on the Joint Parliamentary Committee. So it's a good news. So that headline may be a little bit misleading because I think they're working on it. Because if we see the Supreme Court decision for that Bengali actress, so there were two incidents. One, she asked to get that her videos deleted, which she didn't like or basically should not be on the public. So I think court gave a favorable decision to her request. And also the second thing about the court decision for one guy who was accused of rape and then his data to be deleted. But then the Southern Madras court actually court or Chennai court gave a decision that no, the concept of open court is a little shady. So that is being stopped there. But I think it's in the right direction, right? The awareness is coming. And eventually once PDPB passes, it's not there today. But right to be forgotten is very important, right? In ton of other places, because how do we even delete the footprint of data which is not true, right? And who is eventually the decision maker, right? It is true or not. So if somebody publishes something about me on YouTube, right, and that goes viral, that does not mean that I have my fundamental right. Don't have a fundamental right. Anybody can say, right? So people do that. Sometimes about the freedom of speech, but I think I as a, on the receiving end also has a freedom of speech and what to be spoken if it's not correct. So I think it's a thin line in general, I think we'll get into right direction. It is actually part of the right to be forgotten in the new law.
What do you think, Heidi?
I think data destruction is one of my favorite topics because there's not an investment in that area. And we've got so much unstructured data. We're not going to need it. We are never going to need it. And we're not going to stop collecting more. So what do we need to do to get rid of it? That's why I like what Samir does, data minimization, get in and get rid of that stuff, you know? And I think that the right to be forgotten isn't really going to be able to be realized until we have better technology to make sure that, you know, It's never going to go away, but make sure that it's just not going to be used in a way that is harmful to you. You know, I mean, the free speech rights, I hear that, but that's only if things are true and not intended to shame, harass, or damage you. So, you know, in those instances, you know, unless it's newsworthy, yet people should have some rights as to what the public knows about them. Data ownership is how we're going to be able to achieve it.
What do you think, Jeff?
I'm glad India is updating their law, and I think a right to be forgotten is sort of interesting. Obviously, there, you know, sort of cuts both ways. Twitter has actually just changed some of their terms of service to allow them to do some better management of harassment and things like that. Privacy activists are a little scared of how that may sort of fall out. But overall, I like the right to be forgotten if it's implemented well. But, you know, I'm also a person who thinks that, you know, we have to have some level of sort of a reputation economy. So, you know, everything that you do can't just be, you know, erased because you don't like what you did in the past, right? So we have to have some level of responsibility for your actions as well. So we have to figure out what that, you know, that balance is. And I think we'll probably, as a society, figure out what that is eventually.
Just want to add in here that the Data Collaborative Alliance supports eliminating copies, supports things about forgetting, you know, to reduce the data footprint and also the risk of retaining data too long. I would say the right to be forgotten, I think it will pass as part of this this Indian law, but the right to be forgotten really only works in places where privacy is a fundamental human right. So in a place like the US, where we don't have that as a fundamental human right, you can't forget something that you never had rights to begin with. So I think I would love to see more places be able to, first of all, make privacy a fundamental human right, and then also look at the right to be forgotten as going further than just having a deletion policy going forward. So let's go to the next topic. Heidi, lawmakers push for federal data privacy law after report reveals Amazon is gutting state legislation. This is interesting.
This article was forever long, but it was a great article. But basically, here's what happened. Jay Carney used to work in DC for past administrations. Amazon was looking for someone who could do some things for them in Washington. So after a long search, they finally got Jay Carney. Jay Carney got over there and said, hey, here's what we need to do. We need to tell them that they can't live without Amazon. Here are all the jobs we provide. Here are all the things that we do. So they need to back up off us on all these other things. And that was kind of, you know, their methodology of going through things. Eventually, they started to understand, because it took him a while to get Silicon Valley to hear him when he says, if you don't engage in dark money activities, you will not have a seat at the table and these legislators will have their way with you. So finally, they started listening and they started opening up a couple of 501c4s. Because as 501c4, you don't have to publish the list of donors. So that is the basic mechanism, the tax structure for a super PAC. Now, there are a couple of them that are out there doing things. This article goes a long way in showing how well linked in the lobbyists are to the legislators, because legislators don't write the law, the lobbyists write the law. And so, but you can see email exchanges back and forth saying, change the definition of this and change the definition of that, because we don't like it. And they did. So, you know, I mean, this is nothing new, but this is just one of those things where when other people find out what's going on, they start to get excited about it. And so for those people, I would like to call your attention to Open Secrets, because Open Secrets is an organization that is always following the money. Think of it as NASCAR for politicians. You want to know who's supporting them? They don't have the labels all over their jackets. Yeah, Open Secrets does. And they follow these people. They know who the lobbyists are. They know where they worked previously. Dark money is called dark because it is groups with ties to the industry they want to regulate. So, I mean, this is how it works in Washington. But Open Secrets will tell you who these people are. These are all of the people that are trying to fight all of the regulations we would like to see for data ownership and regulation of big tech. All of these right here on this page are new. American Edge is the newest one that they set up. It's Facebook, pretty much. And so, but they say, hey, I'm a think tank, and here's what I'm doing. I'm working on all of these great projects. But what they're really doing is pushing back on antitrust and any other sorts of regulations. And you could just see the interplay of how these groups work and where the money's coming from and the impact it's having on Washington. So this is why we're not getting things done here. But the entrance of big tech into dark money in the last 2 years is exactly why you're seeing everything that you're seeing right now. Because before they just said the regulations don't apply to me and whatever they're doing in Washington is in Washington. So, but they're here now. They're definitely here now. And it's fascinating for me to watch. I'm excited when other people, you know, get clued into it because they can start watching it as well. It's my favorite sport. But really our rights are at stake here. And so I like the fact that Open Secrets likes to call people out. So we need to know our colleagues are working with these people. If you're getting paid $15,000 a month to advise Amazon, then I don't necessarily know that you have the foundations and fundamentals of the privacy principles that I have. So colleague, yes, same, no. So that's where I am on that. I like the daylight on this situation too.
Well, Heidi is very badass, so we love it. Jeff, what do you think about this?
Well, I think you can see that money is flowing into a lot of these issues, just based upon how the state legislation games have been playing out. Right, if you look at states like Florida, where Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, where a lot of these privacy laws have been going back and forth, and it looks like they're going to pass, and then they change radically and they go back and forth. I mean, Florida is really a great example. I mean, they almost passed the bill and just came down as a nail biter and almost passed, but then didn't, right? And it was all these laws are, are politics, right? But it was pretty obvious that there was a lot of money at stake in that particular legislative session. I think Heidi's very much right. There's a lot of money at stake, and it's influencing what's in state legislation.
Samir, would you like to chime in?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think this is definitely, I think it took us behind as a society, probably 2 to 3 years before, right? I think, because see, if you push this legislation forward, right, if you don't get the some kind of limitation on what data is collected, eventually that data is getting into the big tech or whatever, whoever collect that, right? So it's just basically pushing timeline. We all know it's gonna have its impacts, and we're gonna get probably these laws, hopefully, with all these stories coming up. But I don't think it's a good news that, with those, I was looking at also those dollar amounts, right? Instead, they had some, they weren't big. I won't sell my privacy for $800, seriously. I mean, if you see those small donations and kind of, so I think it's a little bit, not little bit, I would say the shocking that, every companies have lobbies and lobbyists and do those kind of things. But I won't imagine that, it is done at such a large scale. And what that means as an American, right, is we lost our 3 words of all data collected. Who's going to pay for that if something bad happens out of that, right? So I think we got to do this data minimization at collection point, right? And anything setting the responsibilities, right? Transparency is one thing, but I don't think users are enough aware that what data they are throwing out there for free. I mean, the concept of sharenting and stuff like that, people post that willingly because they just don't know what are the impacts of that, what their kids, what their themselves, how people can misuse that data. And I was reading other day about this whole doxing story, right? We'll talk about that in the next news cycle, I think, which is in front of me here. But no, not good news. I think this story should actually put towards fastening this regulation procedure across the state and even at the federal level more.
This is a really important story, right? And I just want to make this additional point. In Florida, right, the Democrats wanted this bill to pass, the Republicans wanted the bill to pass, and the governor wanted the bill to pass, right? And the bill didn't pass. Why is that?
Because there's a lot more money to be made in prolonging the problem than coming up with a solution that works.
Agreed. So Jeff, you're up next. Hacking fingerprints is affordable and simple, says Kraken Security. Tell us about that.
So this story is pretty interesting. Obviously, you know, fingerprints are probably one of the first biometric pieces of information a lot of people think about. Well, maybe they think about facial recognition first, right? But fingerprints are very basic, right? And this Kraken article essentially says that for $5, anybody can probably steal your fingerprints and use them to, you know, log into anything you've tried to secure with that, right? For myself, I actually use fingerprints to secure my bank account and my health records on my phone. And so this is pretty damn scary. Luckily, I have, you know, my phone secured with other stuff. So if somebody were to steal my phone, they wouldn't be able to immediately log into those apps. But assuming they could break into my phone, they can get into my bank and they can get into my health records. I got to go change my security now after reading this story, because that's just not acceptable to me, right? That's really, really bad. I think people don't realize how problematic this is, right? I mean, it sounds like, you know, securing your bank account with your fingerprint would be a good thing, and it's just not.
Yeah. What do you think, Heidi?
I'm concerned as well. You know, I've always had the position that I can't get a new face. So, and where do I go to argue with somebody that this is my face, whoever stole my face and is doing something with it? How do I catch them? And how do I argue this is my face instead of them saying that's their face? Like, I don't know how I prove the ownership of my face or my fingerprint, and I can't get new ones. So, I mean, that's always been my problem with collecting biometric data. So, you know, you can have as many safeguards in place as you want, but you're still collecting it. I too am doing the same thing with my phone. So, you know, I don't know what would happen if, you know, if it suddenly said that's not your fingerprint.
The danger here that we're seeing, and we'll continue to see more and more, is that when you digitize biometric information, it becomes its own other thing. So it doesn't, you know, fingerprint is removed from the individual, right? So then it becomes its own data point in and of itself, and you can manipulate computers to do almost anything. So it's very crazy and scary, definitely. Samir, do you have a comment?
Yeah, so I think the key thing about biometric is you can change your passwords, you can change your two-factor, you cannot change your fingerprint. So I think though it is the simplest way, or it makes the authentication so easy and unique, but at the same time, if it is stolen, it is stolen. And I don't think we have found solution for that. So most of the states actually worry about that, and I think everybody tried to do some kind of a biometric. But we need to be really careful about the whole biometrics. And people tried to actually not to use that feature. I see a lot of people, they don't actually want to put their fingerprint on the iPhone. Use that as an authentication method. But I think technologically we need to evolve, right? In terms of either using alternate way of biometric, right? Maybe two ways of biometric, I don't know. But of course, that particular uniqueness of biometric authentication, that definitely needs to be considered very heavily, because poor users, if there is a mass collection of that, and if somebody uses that, I don't think you can even stop that harm in terms of. So, of course, anything we do in that direction should be a very positive step. And even bypassing that, then, you know, it's even wild west there, right? So I would say, I don't know if we go away from the biometric authentication in future, or just alternate those methods, that may be the way to go.
Biometrics is crazy, and it's going fast and far, way ahead of where we're going. The only thing I can think of, and maybe this on the horizon, is kind of liveness detection stuff, where, like, so if Jeff is using his fingerprint in the town he's in now, if someone uses his fingerprint in some other location, they'll probably say, well, that's not Jeff because, you know, he's not there, or the signature isn't from a human, someone who has like heat or light or something. I don't know. I'm just talking crazy at this point. So the next story we have, and this is going to be interesting. So Samir, you want to talk about Clearview AI was told it broke Australia's privacy law in order to delete data. I like the story. I know a lot about it. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So I think Clearview is actually facing the action in Australia. I think they have some time frame between October 19 and 20, the way. So everybody knows, right? There was a big story, I think UK or something came out of Europe earlier in terms of the Clearview AI. So here it's an interesting thing, right? The whole Clearview concept. So I do have a consent, right? When I put my picture on Facebook or any social media, right? Just to identify myself in one way or other way. That is one thing, right? You have a consent to use that to my connection, right? And basically look at my photo, right? But like we talked about, we do a mass collection of that and use, right? For that concept called doxing, that's completely illegal, right? And I think that has a mass impact. So now what I'm doing is, okay, I may have individual consent for a particular person. We are actually violating the purpose there, that I'm not supposed to have an AI engine just because I pay someone $10,000 or something just to get information, because they can do it in a faster way, right? They can get those facial pictures from 10 different places and give you accurate. So I think, of course, any kind of scrutiny on that and the whole giving. The airport and all that, there are a lot of legit use cases of that where people want to use that for security, but it's again between the security and thing. So interesting story. I think it's not just another government eventually realized that Australian citizens' data, mass data. And we so far heard stories, right, that government has our data, like fingerprints and things of that sort. But now if the somebody is doing from the private entity where government has no control on that, not the elected, so just then it's basically up for sale for anyone, that's kind of scary. So I'm, again, positive story for, and I think we're going to see more governments kind of doing.
What do you think, Jeff?
I think it's just an example of what's to come, right? That they're going to be cracking down a lot on probably not just big tech, but also on data brokers.
What say you, Heidi?
Ooh, I say I want to hear from the data diva on this, because I know you've been following BIPA in Illinois, and like, ooh, I want to hear from you.
Oh my goodness, I have lots to say. So basically, this is a big deal because Clearview AI has cases like this pending in multiple jurisdictions, including the US with the BIPA case. So Australia basically put the hammer down on Clearview, told them to delete this data. They were working with the UK on this case, and it recently came out that the UK is going to order them to do the same thing. And I think they've been fined as well, several million dollars for this. So they also have to delete those images. So next up, all eyes on the US and Illinois and what's going to happen with this Clearview AI BIPA case. Part of their case in the US, though, is that they feel like they have a First Amendment right to collect this data. And the problem that we have here in the US goes back to us not having privacy as a fundamental human right. Mm-hmm. We don't really have a right not to share. So because we don't have that, you know, the problem with this argument, and if it passes, it's like, okay, does Clearview AI's, you know, First Amendment right to free speech usurp my right as an individual for free speech? But you haven't said anything, right? So my data that they're collecting, you know, surreptitiously or whatever, scraping off the internet, is that speech for me, and is it protected? So this is going to be crazy blockbusters bananas case with Clearview AI. So I'm really interested to see how this and other kind of data scraping type cases happen, because what they're really doing, and the thing that Australia and the UK and even the US is concerned about, is that they're putting data about innocent people in databases that are used for criminals, criminal activity. So it's creating a guilty until proven innocent type of scenario when you're doing that. So it's a big issue in the tech world right now about these types of databases, where we have technology people saying, okay, we can supply empty databases to police departments to give them the capability to collect the stuff, but they need to collect the stuff based on the evidence that they have or the people they want to target, as opposed to having this huge mosh pit of anyone and everyone and trying to create sort of a criminal element for about every person.
So there was a concept, actually, we were doing some research with like a Maryland Law School student almost 2 years ago. So we introduced in that article the concept of national privacy, right? So even if you are doing a mass data collection, say for legit government reasons or anything, I'm comfortable sharing my face and my data with the national, particular that country government. But that does not mean any company from outside, right? It may be a very local, right? They use that for legit, but the concept of national privacy is okay. That particular thing can be shared with my country, but not the rest of the beyond those boundaries. So that was an interesting concept. We actually wrote a little bit of paragraph on that in that the larger article. But I think the things are getting there, right? And I think Clearview AI is all over, right? So depending on where, who should have this all mass data other than the even the government, I think it's a big thing to, and I hope that gets straightened out at some point with this kind of things.
Excellent. That's excellent. Does anyone have anything else to add? I think that's our last story for today.
Yeah, I was just going to add that since we are coming up on the fresh new season for people introducing their favorite BIPA knockoff in the legislative session in the spring, I just want to remind people that your cut and paste didn't work last year. So don't do it again. Let's look and see what is working, what legislation is working. If you really are interested in drafting legislation that's going to go somewhere, then I think you need to find out what is not working about BIPA, because there are appellate cases on, you know, each instance, is it a violation, those sorts of small things. So, I mean, if you're going to cut and paste a legislation that's already had, you know, things disputed in the legislation and case law has altered that, in the legal field, we call that shepherdizing. You need to shepherdize that and make sure you're not going forward with bad law. And I wish lobbyists would do that. Like, yes, go and create things, but be smart about it. Because if you're not, we're just going to call you out, because the same thing didn't work last year and it's ignorant to try it again.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for being able to do this session. I really enjoyed this. And this is very, very educational and thought-provoking for the listeners.
Anytime. Thank you for hosting, Devi. I'm pretty sure these conversations are pretty interesting.
Yeah, this is great.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
The Data Drop is a production of the Data Collaboration Alliance, a nonprofit dedicated to advancing meaningful data ownership and global collaborative intelligence. Data Drop viewers are invited to check out Node Zero, our free community where members collaborate on datasets, dashboards, and open tools in support of important causes. The Alliance also provides students and mid-career professionals with free learning in data-centric skills. Visit datacollaboration.org.